Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, July 15th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've used to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional state I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been gifted. So you can also download off of that webpage the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. There are no requirements for downloading it. You don't have to get put on a waiting list or a mailing list, I meant to say, or make any form of payment arrangement. It's simply click, download the PDF, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you will see the glowing heart icon. You tap on that, it will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. Also available on that web page is a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either done the actual worksheet process or been giving powerful testimonials about the use of that worksheet has improved the quality of their lives. We also have available, I haven't mentioned it in quite a while, but we have available the Mind Shifters Academy .org website, and that's another place where you can get some of these audio files, some of the interviews I've done with various people in the past couple of years since I've started the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio, some of the tools that I use with people in my office, the forgiveness pattern, the talk about how to say goodbye to good people without saying goodbye to good memories. So we are hoping people make use of this, that they go to these websites soon and often, that they try the worksheet in their life, that they listen to some of the podcasts from the archives of the past 10 years, which can serve as a tutorial for how to apply this tool in your life most effectively. And then we hope people do that, number one, because it tends to make people's lives better, and number two, because that tends to promote questions and comments. And if you do that and you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 and we'll have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. We're on the 196th day of the year. And today's lesson reads, "It can be but myself I crucify." And the commentary reads, "When this is firmly understood and kept in full awareness, you will not attempt to harm yourself nor make your body a slave to vengeance. You will not attack yourself, and you will realize that to attack another is the same as attacking yourself. You will be free of the insane thought and belief that to attack a brother somehow saves yourself, and you will understand your brother or sister's safety is your own, and your brother or sister's healing is your healing. Perhaps you first will not understand how mercy, limitless, and with all things held in its sure protection, can be found in the idea we practice for today. It may, in fact, appear to be a sign that punishment can never be escaped because the ego, under what it sees as threat, is quick to cite the truth to save its lies. Yet, it must fail to understand the truth it uses thus. But you can learn to see these things as foolish and deny the meaning that they appear to have. Thus, do you also teach your mind that you are not an ego, for the ways in which the ego would distort the truth can no longer deceive you. When that happens, you will not believe you are a body to be crucified, and you will see within today's idea the light of resurrection, looking past all thoughts of crucifixion and death, looking to thoughts of liberation and of life. So, again, there are 12 or 13 paragraphs of commentary, but the essence is the recognition that since we are all connected, every time I attack anyone or anything, I'm also attacking myself. So understanding the truth of who you are, using these lessons, practicing their shifts in perception that they're asking you to embody and practice, relieves you from the belief of separation and the need to attack others in order to protect yourself. So that's the lesson for today. The lesson reads simply, "It cannot be but myself that I crucify." So when I attack somebody else, I'm essentially attacking myself. When I let my mind tell me that I need to attack someone, I have believed a lie. Pam Grout has the book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, and her lesson 196 is titled, "Lit with Hope and Sparkling with Gentle Friendliness." She quotes C. Joy Bell C. as saying, "I tie no weights to my ankles." She writes, "When my friend Robin was a little girl, she had two burning questions. How were the giraffes getting to Kansas? And why don't we want them peeping in our windows?" Every night, Robin's mom insisted she close her bedroom windows to avoid, well, Robin always thought she said giraffes. Needless to say, she eventually figured out that her mother was saying drafts. Her mom hoped to keep out. But for quite a while, Robin was extremely puzzled why her mother wouldn't want those really cool, really tall animals stopping by for a visit. After all, they paid good money to go see them at the zoo. Robin's innocent misinterpretation is a good metaphor for the perceptual mistakes we make every day when we get up expecting difficulties and unhappiness. For that matter, getting up every morning and expecting this day to be a repeat of yesterday, and we all do, is a huge misinterpretation and a gigantic fence that keeps the world's bounty from flowing in the windows. Lesson 196, I can only be hurt by my thoughts, as Pam paraphrases it, tells me that clinging to what I know, believing that it's possible to be attacked, and therefore justifying my attack on others, all of this locks out the world's largesse, along with the drafts and the giraffes. I am promised that if I really take this lesson in, I will proceed quickly, surely, and forever. So, I repeat, it is impossible that I can be hurt by anything except my own thoughts. So, that's lesson 196 from the Course in Miracles workbook and Pam Grout's commentary from her book, The Course in Miracles Experiment. And we have 48 minutes left to entertain your comments or questions, to work through a worksheet with you, to discuss with you what the worksheet process is and is for, or answer any kind of comments or questions you have based on the last 10 years of Mind Shifter Radio, 5 days a week, 1 hour a day for the first 8 years, and now 2 hours a day. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What would be of benefit for you to discuss? I was just having a session with somebody, and we were talking about the mind-body connection, the energy. We're limited by language, and language has me saying mind and body as though they're two separate things. And they're not. It's all just energy. And there is a powerful, always connected relationship between the things I think, the things I fear, the things I hope, the things I believe, the images that those thoughts and beliefs generate in my mind that we call perception, and what I experience as a physical entity. One of the primary ways to tap into that and understand it is the work of Dr. John Sarno, who was an orthopedic surgeon who did back surgeries, and he wanted to figure out what's the most important part, what's the most effective part of the back surgeries that he did. And his research left him with the very solid conclusion that there was nothing in the back surgeries he did that was responsible for the elimination of pain and restoration of motion in his patients. And you might say, well, how could that be? And the answer is that he discovered that the things that show up on scans, x-rays, MRIs, CAT scans, etc., that most people assume are causing back pain. And these are things like bulging, herniated and ruptured discs, arthritic spurs and pinched nerves and curvature of the spine, etc., show up on a lot of people's scans who do not have any pain or restriction of motion. And so he was left with the conclusion that those images on the scans and those changes in the spine can't be responsible for the pain, simply because if they were, then everybody who had that on their scans and x-rays would have the pain and restriction of motion, and they don't. So he went looking for because he believes that the people who come to him that say they're in excruciating pain, he believes they're having that pain. So he went looking for another cause of the pain. And what he discovered is a thing he called tension myoneural syndrome. And the tension myoneural syndrome means when I hold mental, emotional tension in my energy system and it causes muscles to tighten or spasm, it reduces blood flow to tissue. And a tiny reduction in the blood flow to tissue, as little as 10%, is enough to initiate excruciating pain. And so what he found was that when he educated people, and he was a medical doctor, so he would begin with the physical scans. He wanted to make sure that people didn't have an actual cracked bone or bone cancer or a piece of a bone that was going to sever a nerve. So he would do the physical scans. But once he realized that what was showing up on the scan was no different than, you know, 80% of the population that have what he then called gray hair of the spine, then he would recommend that instead of doing surgeries, that people would stop all of the physical deep tissue manipulation, alternating hot and cold, electrical stim, you know, exercises, stretchings, etc., and look at the mental, emotional component in the system and recognize that when they were having back spasms and pain, it's going to be related to and it's going to respond most effectively to exploring the emotional psychological connection. So he literally quit doing surgeries and instead gave educational lectures to groups of people, and his success rate went from being in the, you know, mid to upper 30s to 80 or 90%, and success rate for surgery, back surgery, the success rate being defined as complete elimination of pain, complete restoration of motion, and no need for a further surgery. Because what they found is most of the time when they do a back or a neck surgery, even if they have complete elimination of pain and complete restoration of motion, in some period of time, 3, 5, 7 years, they're going to have to go in again and do another surgery to clear out the scar tissue. So what he found is if he talks to people about the mental-emotional connection, he helps them understand what the unconscious dynamics are that are getting manifested in this spasming within the energy system, and they find a way to release those stresses, they don't continue to have the pain. They find a resolution without a surgery and without the continued need for deep tissue massage and electrical stim and all of that stuff. So this is not a mind attached to a body. This is not two separate systems that interact. We are an energy system, and we can visualize and we can talk about and we can conceptualize it as having different components, but it's just one thing. So if you look at it from a systems approach, if you find somebody who acknowledges the powerful role of your thoughts and your beliefs in every part of your energy system, then you might find some solutions that shock you, that aren't related to continual physical manipulation and stretching and physical therapy and electrical stimulation, etc. If you want to find out more about that, you can look up Dr. John Sarno, S-A-R-N-O. You can go to the website that is All the Rage, one word, allthereage.doc, no spaces, allthereage.doc, which is for documentary, the DOC is for documentary.com. And you can see a documentary that was done on Dr. Sarno's work. You can also run your own experiments. You can also look on YouTube for Brad Yates and a whole bunch of other people who are doing EFT tapping, emotional freedom technique tapping. And you can start doing EFT tapping when you have an ache or a pain. I spent the better part of 10 years doing an all-day class two or three times a year at a place in Barrington, Illinois, called Relax, the number 4, Life. And I would teach EFT tapping. And that facility had arranged it so people could get their continuing education credits. And on a regular basis, in that class, people would have resolution to neck pain, shoulder pain, back pain, foot pain, just from spending the day from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. learning about how to breathe differently, how to watch their thoughts differently, and how to do this tapping, which is rubbing or tapping, either one works well, which is acknowledgement of the acupressure meridian systems and integrating that into breath work and acknowledging upset and releasing it and letting it go, thinking in terms of energy and energy flow. One notable situation happened when I was just giving I think it was a 45-minute talk at one of the metaphysics schools in the area. So there were 8 or 10 people sitting around in a circle, and I showed them what the tapping was, and I said, so pick an issue that you've got some upset for and rate it on a scale of 0 to 10, and then let's do a round of tapping. Even though I have this issue, I love and accept myself. Even though I have this issue, I love, accept, and forgive myself. And then after a couple rounds of tapping, I said, okay, now take a breath and scan your body and notice what you notice and tell me, did the upset, the pain, the frustration, the emotions, did it get stronger, stay the same, or get less? And the one woman erupted with, oh, my God, I can move my shoulder. And she was in the group running her hand up over her head and back behind her and in a windmill fashion, backwards and forwards. And I said, well, okay. She said, no, you don't get it. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I haven't been able to do that for 12 years. Now, some people would think, oh, my gosh, a miracle healing. But if you understand Dr. John Sarno's work, it makes perfect sense. If there's a spasm in my muscle, which is cutting off blood flow or pinching a nerve, and I try to move this shoulder where there's this spasming muscle in just the right or slash wrong place, I'm not going to be able to move the muscle. I'm not going to be able to roll the shoulder. It's going to be too painful. And my mind is going to tell me, you know, don't move that way. It hurts too much. But if I do this release tapping, releasing the breath, releasing the thoughts and the emotions, the fear, the anger, the hurt, and it actually shifts the energy flow, all of a sudden, the muscle isn't spasming. It's not, the tension myoneural syndrome is not activated, and I'm not inducing excruciating pain in that bundle of muscles, and my shoulder works freely. So it's not a miracle cure, and yet it is, for many people, a very effective relief of symptomatology. And if people are willing to use an approach like that often enough, long enough, they can actually have a shift at the cause level. They can get rid of the angers, the fears, the vengeances, the guilt, the shames, the low self-esteem conclusions that have been feeding that tension in their mind-body energy system, sometimes for decades. So that's another approach that's possible. The reality management worksheet is another wonderful approach that helps me map out what I'm doing with my conscious logical mind, how that's convinced other parts of my mind that certain things need to happen for it to be happy or safe. And then in every reality management worksheet process, I map that out, and then I cancel it all and ask to be shown something else. So, you know, maybe you don't want to go to alltheragedoc.com, but you can go to YouTube and type in John Stossel and John Sarno, and you can see the, I forget what new show he's on, 60 Minutes or 2020, and he had done a news piece on Dr. Sarno and began using Dr. Sarno's approach and ended up doing away with daily and multiple times a day stretching and ice packs that he had been told and he used to use for years to try and manage his back pain. So it's a shorter version. The essence of the work is there. There are different ways to get it free. And we're encouraging people to explore, to question everything you think you know. I remember reading the other day from Bertrand Russell's list of the Ten Commandments. And the first one is, do not feel absolutely certain of anything. It's positively stated, that is, question everything. Be skeptical. Live in the question. Much of what we're taught by our families and by our culture, only the possibility to lock us in the same angers, fears, and frustrations and hurts that have driven our population for thousands of years to be in depression, to be in war, to be in the, you know, wild goose chase for happiness that's never found. And once you recognize that when you're trained by a system that has endless wars for thousands of years, the internal or external war is all you're ever going to get from that system. So take a leap of faith. Try something new. Question everything. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Susan, is that you?
It is, and I apologize. I had to do a task. It's a long story. But anyway, I'm finally on, and I didn't hear anything of your intro. But I had a question about the lesson from yesterday about gratitude. I don't feel much gratitude. And I wondered if I could, even when I appreciate things, I would like a different word. Like, could gratitude be something like accepting, acknowledging, even allowing, except allowing sounds as if I have a choice or some kind of influence, and that might not be right. And I have other questions too, but I'm just driving home, and I wanted to ask you that.
Well, again, we'll come back to reminding us all that these are just words. Right, and they only hold the meaning for us that we hold in our minds. The letters, the sounds by themselves have no meaning unless we define them in a certain way. So it sounds like you're defining gratitude differently than I would. And so, you know, I think gratitude, who cares? I would say that gratitude in my mind is very much similar to appreciation. Mm-hmm. If there's a genuine appreciation, and as long as there's an absolutely neutral filter on it, gratitude is very similar in my mind to allowance and surrender.
Okay.
So help me understand what it is about the word gratitude or the meaning in your mind that you think you're not doing or that you're not achieving.
Okay.
When you say you're allowing, but you're not really grateful.
Okay, I think of
what
gratitude.
What is the definition in your mind?
It's a feeling.
Okay.
Sorry about the noise. I'm just
okay, so it's a feeling of what?
Akin to joy or levity or something. We've been going through a very tricky time. And, you know, on one level, I can say, this is a learning experience. Thank you very much. We're all being invited to grow. That's wonderful. But I don't like it. And I don't feel grateful. I'm crabbing about it. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I would not, you know, in the way that I've been trained and come to think about it, I wouldn't tie gratitude to a sense of joy.
Okay.
Or, you know, happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, ebullient, joyful, bubbly. Now, there are some spiritual teachings that talk about joy as distinct from pleasure, like the Q&A in the Way of Mastery. And there's a whole talk about how joy is what happens when you stay connected to the awareness that we're all part of the one mind and that you're not
mm-hmm.
abandoned and that it's all going to work out. And that's not the happiness that you feel at a kid's birthday party when everybody's
mm-hmm.
singing and dancing and having a great time. That's just this core grounded awareness of your true nature and your perfect safety and all that stuff. So joy in that sense is not the bright, bubbly, happy, you know, immediate gratification type thing. The joy in that sense is this connection to all of creation, this awareness of your perfect safety. And so again, each of these words has their own meaning for whoever's receiving the word.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, gratitude is just like appreciation. I appreciate it. I accept it for what it is. I allow it to be what it is.
Yeah, I can.
And so in allowance, you know, you said that looks like choice to you when you say the word allowance.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to people about allowance in the Way of Mastery and the fifth lesson from the Way of Mastery, it says the keys to the kingdom are desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility. And when I talk to people about allowance in that lesson, I talk about it's my willingness to be vigilant for resistance within me and release the resistance as soon as I recognize it. Right? So the allowance is about my acceptance of the flow of life and creation rather than my resisting it.
Right.
I'm giving myself permission to relax into whatever happens. I'm not giving the world permission to exist. It doesn't need my permission. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
well, it does. Allowing and accepting have very different feeling tones and meanings to me. But if if acceptance is one of the words that could be used, that pretty much takes care of the problem. Ellen said a cool thing. We were talking in the Zoom group about how do I feel gratitude when I'm struggling over my son and trying my very best to do worksheets and not, you know, back off from the idea that I might help or fix in any way, stop being codependent. It feels like an ongoing, very demanding assignment to be witness to pain and to breathe through it, which is what I feel allowing means. Just breathe through it and say, this is what's happening. This is his journey. This is the way it has to be for him for some reason. I have no control over it at all except to care for him, sit vigil, and believe in his strength and healing powers. So, but then Ellen said, well, what about when you're on a walk? Even though that's all going on, you can have gratitude for the bumblebees and the flowers, and that is certainly true. And just to focus a little bit on a bumblebee is a healing thing in itself. I am allowing the overriding situation in my family to really shape my reality all the way along the line, just pushing against it with worksheets. And I mean, I started up, in fact, I wanted to ask you about this too. You haven't mentioned the use of a mantra. And when Tim Bingham and I were studying with a Swami in New York with the Ramakrishna Order, we were given mantras and we were told to say them constantly. And we had beads and we would sit and say them. But even during the day, they call it japa. You probably know this. Saying japa. And some, I remember in the group we were in, we went on a retreat every summer with the adherents to this, and some were from India, and I would see their mouths moving constantly, and they were doing their japa. And I always found the japa to be extremely unnerving, as if it was a constant kind of noise. And I stopped doing it after a while because it seemed less than peaceful to do it. But then last night, in my usual fashion, I woke up with my gremlins and my collywobbles and my demons out. And I thought, maybe I should try saying the mantra again. And I began to say it. And what literally it was an image in my mind of words pushing other words out. Mantra, if it keeps going, just doesn't allow the full impact of the negative thoughts. They're sitting around the edges, jeering maybe, but the mantra, and I thought maybe that's why people have done mantras for years, is to keep the bad thoughts away. That's sort of a question. I don't know what, I mean, a mantra is so that you will remember God every instant, but it's also a way of doing battle.
Well, you can think of it, you can conceptualize it as a way of doing battle, but it's essentially just a focusing practice. And if you remember the deep spiritual teaching that comes from a lot of different sources, and I've distilled it into the following. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment. And it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment which actually creates your experience of life in that moment. And therein lies the power of the mantra. If I am choosing the focus of my conscious awareness each moment to be the mantra, I create an experience of my life in that moment with the mantra in mind as a determining factor in the creation of my perception. So it isn't necessary, in my opinion, to look at it as doing battle, although you can. But it is a focusing agent. It's a choice of what to focus on.
But
and
the cool...
it comes to me to say that Dr. Michael Rice was out. This was back in the time when I was able to introduce him to Guy Finley, and he was able to stop there in Oregon. And he and Jeannie were out there. But he was also in connection with the second in line to the Dalai Lama. And this gentleman saw Michael do the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop and said, oh, my gosh, this is fabulous. We need this. And he had Michael come back and do the workshop again in English, mm-hmm. and he translated for the monks mm-hmm. into their native language. And in that exchange, what this priestly monk said was, you know, when we're back in Tibet, in our home country, we didn't need this. But here in America, we need this. So
wow.
when they're in Tibet, when they're in a country where all kinds of people are walking around doing their spiritual practice and chanting their mantras and, you know, the energy and the mindset is what it is, they don't need the reality management worksheet process. They don't need to dismantle the negative thoughts and cancel the goals, et cetera. But when they're in this culture, when they're immersed with all of these distractions, when they're, you know, trained to be in judgment and competition, he said, we need this tool. And
wow.
so it might be, you know, it might be relevant to what you're talking about with the mantra. And what was the word you used that starts with a J sound?
Japa.
Japa.
J-A-P-A.
Okay. So when you're, if you're in a culture, if you're in a community where everybody is reciting their mantras and doing japa all day long, you may not need reality management worksheets.
Mm-hmm. The beauty,
you know,
of a mantra.
If the goal is the acceptance of your true safety and the appreciation of the gift of life, however you get there is irrelevant. Just get there.
Mm.
You know, G.P. Walsh, have you heard me talk about him in the past? We had a woman who had written a book, and it was early in a couple of years ago when I was doing interviews for the Mind Shifter Radio when I first started, and there was a woman who introduced me to G.P. Walsh, and he has a process he calls inner reconciliation. And essentially, it's all of this stuff from a slightly different angle. And he says, you know, here's basically the issue to all of the psychological processes and spiritual processes that he'd looked at before he discovered his own, was that everybody was trying to help us get rid of our negative thoughts and low self-esteem and, you know, fix this about ourselves and fix that about ourselves. And he had a spiritual awakening and says, wait a minute, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to get rid of anything. You just have to come to peace with all that is within you, and essentially. And so there's this inner reconciliation.
Mm.
And it's just about finding a different way to bring about what is intended when people say intention, allowance, surrender, acceptance, gratitude. Whatever people are intending, those words are pointing in the same direction.
Yeah.
And so he developed a process. He calls it, you know, inner reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say?
I think of the mantra a little bit the way I think of tapping. It is an emergency application. The great thing about a mantra is you don't have to think positive thoughts to counteract the negative thoughts. You don't have to be thinking about anything. You just, it's like a thing. You put this verbal thing, which is a name of God in Sanskrit. or a phrase, a worshipful phrase in Sanskrit. And in our culture, we don't even know specifically what those words mean. And that's almost better because they are not a thought. They are a thing that you infuse in there that pushes out the negative thoughts, but they are not themselves even thoughts, where in a worksheet you go through the process and you end up with a sublime thought, a helpful thought. And that's great if you can do it, but I think in the middle of the night when you're really rather a wreck, a mantra is like, it's like a lifeline, just something
it's
to hang on
you.
To. Yeah.
Okay. It's helping. And if it helps, keep doing it.
Oh, I'm going
right.
to. Yeah.
Okay. And how it works and why it works isn't even necessary to understand. If it works, if it allows you to have that peace of mind, if it allows you to step into one of those words, however you define it, of gratitude or allowance or surrender or appreciation, then do it.
It isn't even that much, Dr. Tim. It's like a survival mechanism. It's just like, this will hold me till morning when I'm awake enough to do my work. This is, it's, you know, just whatever it is. It's, there's nothing magic. It's like a blunt instrument. And yet I know they don't, I have a friend who's a Sikh, and they probably do mantras in that tradition. And I want to talk to her about all the ways she regards a mantra. And if it's very interesting for the show, I'll tell you, but she's away and I'm not talking to her right now. But yeah. Yeah, it doesn't, the mantra recitation doesn't lead to anything, not gratitude. It's just pushing open a space where I can stay well enough to subsist until morning. That sounds so awful, but that's how I feel sometimes in the middle of the night. So, and I'm sure other people do too, but anyway.
Understood. And we would recommend use whatever tools work.
Yeah.
And there are times in our life when there is so much going on that, you know, as Michael says, the plea from Job to the Creator, hey, just give me enough time to swallow my spit, right?
Yeah,
just give
that's
me enough
what
space
feels like.
To survive mm-hmm. until morning with your mantra. Okay, so do your japa until morning.
Mm-hmm. The worksheets have been very general, too. The past 2 days, they've been, my light is trapped by the reality I hold about life and about the future, or life being a struggle, which is already an interpretation. And the goal is to have it be easier, healthy, joyful, peaceful. And from there, I'm getting a ton of memories all the way up through being a young teenager of what amount to being supportive witnesses to the fact that life is hard. Now, why holding on to that, why those are ready to come out of the woodwork, I don't know, because you said a cool thing the other day. You were quoting somebody that life is monotonously good or easy
good, yep.
or helpful. Yeah, good. That's so true. And Eckhart Tolle always says, well, how are you right now? You know, what's happening right now? You're fine, right? You're fine. Here you are. And I think, yes, 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 all true. But what is it? We have these, at least I do, it's like a pudding with the lumps still in. There are these just pockets of evidence that life isn't good or life won't be good or we're in deep trouble. So it's, and I think all these have been
right, but they're data
inspired.
Points. Listen, before you move on from that, what you're talking about are data points that can be interpreted as woe is me, doom and gloom, etc. But they aren't proof of anything. And when you put your worry filter on, when you put your fear filter on, a bumblebee can look fearful.
Yeah.
Right? When you put your curiosity filter on, it's a marvelous exploration in just observing nature and the miracle of life. You put your fear filter on, and oh my God, this thing could sting me. It's horrible. It could be the, what if I'm allergic? What if I die before I can get to the hospital or my EpiPen? It depends on the filter you use.
Mm-hmm.
So just be really careful the way you describe that, so that you are honest with yourself about the fact that these are just neutral data points, and they only look scary or fearful when you look at them through that filter.
But I'm remembering concrete experiences of stress or you know, teenager, first time away from home. Everybody goes through this. I was sent to a Girl Scout camp, and I think I became awake at the camp. It was rainy and cold. I had my little parakeet with me, and the parakeet, I was afraid for his well-being, so I kept his cage covered and kept him under a desk in my cabin for 2 or 3 days before the counselor and I had a conference, and they moved the parakeet to the main house that had heat, and that was great. But my experience was sitting in an outhouse, a six-holer outhouse, and I'm by myself having diarrhea from homesickness and just feeling horribly depressed. And that's just a kid going to camp. But it was in itself a bad experience, and this experience I haven't thought of in years. But it came up as evidence that life is hard and full of trouble and all that sort of thing. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm telling you these things.
Okay,
but again,
you survived in ways you couldn't have imagined. It became part of a life learning experience that prepared you for other things. And the interpretation of it as bad or dangerous or hard is just that, an interpretation. There are other people who thrill at that kind of an adventure. You know, there's a song lyric that says, I like every minute of the day. I get a buzz from being cold and wet. The pleasure seems to balance out the pain. Everything is your interpretation.
I don't know if that's true, Dr.
Okay, you don't have to. But you could play with it and observe, right? Because, again,
okay,
what we're saying is don't be too certain about anything. This is from the Bertrand Russell Ten Commandments, right? The first one is do not feel absolutely certain of anything. And Rainier Maria Rilke tells us, learn to live in the question. Open up and question everything. I am absolutely convinced this person's wrong and I'm right and that's settled in. But if I walk away from that situation with any level of tension or anxiety or frustration or sadness in me, I'm the one who's in error, at least in terms of the deep, true meaning of these neutral facts.
Right? Okay,
so just open to that.
But there's the phenomenon of a kid with no particular preset, or maybe that's just not true right there. But I went up to that camp looking forward to it. It was going to be great, and I met this experience. It was like being bombarded with unpleasant feelings and things, but I don't think I was interpreting. I was just experiencing.
Yes, and you did not enjoy the experiences you had. And right. you didn't stay open as to them as just being neutral. You put the filter on it of negativity. Do you remember the old camp song, Hello Mother, Hello Father, Here I Am at Camp Granada?
No.
Did you ever? Yeah, there was a comedy routine of the guy that, you know, take me home, oh mother, father, take me home. I hate Granada. Everything about the camp is horrible. And he's writing this letter. He's singing the song of writing the letter. And wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun just came out. And people are swimming and shooting archery. And never mind the letter. And, you know, in a moment's notice, I shift the filter. And all of a sudden, my experience changes. It's cute. You'd probably enjoy it. Look up Camp Granada comedy song on YouTube. Everything is available on YouTube. I'm sure you'll find it. And then the name of the comedian will come to me. But the point is, all the great teachings tell us, look, life is just this flow of energy. It's all neutral until we label it. And you don't have to believe that, but you can start playing with it, and you can start noticing mm-hmm. how differently your experience unfolds when you're interpreting something negatively or when you're interpreting it positively or even neutrally.
I totally would agree with you as an adult, having learned the tools and had a chance to look at things that way. I totally agree with you. A kid of 12 or whatever I was not equipped in any way to know that I was interpreting. I don't know what I'm arguing for, but it just seems as if it's the raw thing.
Well, you're arguing for your experience, and no one's arguing against it. That was your experience.
Mm-hmm. But,
and we're in full
acceptance.
That I didn't
have a
choice.
Yes,
that was your experience.
And
oh, you had no choice. You didn't know any better. You were conditioned in a certain way, and so you didn't have a choice. And it's not until you know better that you can do better.
Okay. So we better start kids young learning this stuff.
Well, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Keep it in the schools. Yeah.
So I realize that we're down to our last couple of minutes, and there's another hand up. We'll save that hand for the second hour with Michael and Jeannie. But again, thank you, Susan, for chiming in here for the last half of the show, and I will mute you so you can stick around for the transition.
Okay.
But thank you for the call and blessings.
You're welcome. Thanks for the answers. Thanks, Dr. Tipp.
So I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Well, welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, July the 15th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. I'll give Michael just a moment to get plugged in here. And
I am plugged.
All right.
So welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted here to be part of this conversation. And I certainly am blessed to be able to get to do this as often as we do in spreading this understanding of these amazing first century Aramaic tools on a broader and broader scale across the globe. So delighted to be here. And Jeannie tells us we've got a hand up already. So let's say hello to our caller. Let's start there. Ms. Jeannie.
Hi, this is Laura. How are you?
Welcome. I'm well. How are you, young lady?
I'm doing okay. It was good to hear Susan and Dr. Tim.
Yes.
But
and what's on your mind? How can we support you today?
Well, I need to do a worksheet. I know I need to do a worksheet, but I'm stuck, and I'm, like, having fear about doing the worksheet, which is stupid, but I know I need to do it because if I do the worksheet, then I can do get done what I need to get done, and, yeah.
So listening to your words, the first thing I'd invite you to do is to let go of the idea that there's anything stupid about you.
Okay.
Does that involve what's what the worksheet's about?
Well, what I'm stuck with is that I had a bad review from my principal.
Right.
And I need to write a rebuttal. But I I don't want to
probably a place for some
that
go ahead
review because it makes me feel so horrible because there might be a small part of truth to it and I don't like that part of myself, but then there's also there are some blatant lies.
Okay. Are you familiar? How much of the work have you done? You know, are worksheets a regular part of your life?
No. They're not a regular part of my life, but I have been aware of them for over 8 years. They need to become a regular part of my life. But.
Okay. Well, we'll be here to support you when and if that's appropriate. And you know, it's a process, and you know. We can want to jump in on something all we want, but until we're the energy field, until we're ready for it, it's not going to happen. Well, the first place to go with it, you know, besides that idea of, you know, using the verbiage, the language of stupid for yourself, which might be a totally separate worksheet, is if you remember the definition we use of the word denial, and that is denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is the cause of what's happening inside of us. And I hear you say, I don't want to read that because it makes me feel. Now, my offering would be that's a very clear case of denial, thinking that what this person says about you could possibly make anything happen in you that would cause feelings that weren't already there.
Yeah.
So if you notice that, what she writes, and if you tell yourself the truth, what she writes resonates some feelings about yourself that you really don't want to look at and deal with, the first order of business would be to remove that which you don't want to look at or deal with so that you can have a clearer mind to deal with whatever's going on. So that would be the first worksheet I would do, or maybe the second one. The first one might be on calling yourself stupid, laboring yourself that, just, you know, automatic comes out of my mouth like it's, you know, fact and it's a lie that your mind
it
tells you.
Because I don't even remember saying the word stupid when I was talking to you just now.
Yep. Well, that's what unconscious speech is. We're unconscious of it.
Oh.
I mean, 80% of the time when I pull something like that out with somebody and say, well, you know, why would you call yourself that? Say, well, I didn't. Well, you know, you can go back and listen to people will say, well, Michael, how did you know that about me? I just listened to your language. If we train ourselves to listen to our our own words, we'll learn tons about ourselves that we otherwise, and it's, you know, oftentimes a family system or a cultural habit, or maybe just a personal habit to hide those things from ourselves. But when we notice that they're there, then we've got a leg up because we can start to get rid of them.
Yeah.
So what's happening with your breath right now? What was that feeling that just flitted by?
Oh, I'm just... I guess I'm...
tired?
Holding my breath, and I know I'm not supposed to do that.
Well, there's no supposed to or not supposed to in this work. Yeah, there's no supposed to or not supposed to. It's just notice that if you're holding your breath, that's the way you hide things from yourself. And when you breathe, you tend to get in touch with those things. And it's only when you get in touch with them that you can let them go. So what are the feelings that what the reviewer wrote that came up for you? I mean, there were feelings towards
that
self.
That I'm not competent, that I'm not a good leader.
Sounds like maybe there's a lot of emotion behind that.
That I don't interact well or have good interpersonal skills. Don't interact well with other people.
Well, I'll offer that I'm certainly in great acceptance of the way you're interacting right now and your willingness, you know, to stop and listen and question yourself. I think that's pretty powerful. But let me just ask a question. Did you ever have a power person? You know, have you been in on any of the discussions we've had about power person dynamic? The radio show now?
I have, but it's been a really long time. Like, I'm aware of the phrase, but I can't right now remember what.
Right. Okay. Let's just review it briefly and see if it fits here. And that is that a power person is someone who had more power over your life at some point than you did. They were not functioning as love. It's the second factor that comes in. And the third factor is that you perceived it as survival. When that occurs, when those three things happen simultaneously, what we tend to do is we tend to open our energy systems. And it's kind of like it puts us in receptive mode. And every energy that's going on in the environment just gets drawn in like a sponge, just sucks in all of that energy. And it becomes part of the foundational picture we have about ourselves. So if you look at the messages that your reviewer wrote, did you ever get any of those messages from a power person? It's usually a parent, though not always. It might be a spouse, and you know, it can happen at any age. Again, it's usually when people are younger, but I've seen people at 60 and 70 have a power person dynamic installed in their minds through those three things happening. If you go back to your early years, did you ever get messages like, I'm not competent, I'm not good enough, I'm broken?
Oh, yeah. From my dad, and then my alcoholic first husband and potential alcoholic second husband. The second husband, I've interpreted all of his messages that way. I don't know that he necessarily, but, and then another principal.
So it sounds like these messages were received pretty early, and that there have been people coming in knocking on your door ever since to remind you that that's inside of you, and maybe it's time to forgive that stuff, a different way of interpreting what's going on with this principle, what went on with the other principle. You know, if I hold within my mind a conclusion about myself that, you know, to say I deserve to be put down, then literally that thought in me sets up a literal, actual high-energy wave that communicates, hey, everybody, when you come toward me, you're supposed to put me down. And most people are so unconscious that they just respond to that. I mean, they may come in fully ready to be committed, loving. You know, have you ever had that happen? You're in a space where you're fully committed to being loving and caring with someone, and all of a sudden you find yourself functioning like a mad banshee? You ever had that happen?
Yeah.
What happened? Oftentimes what occurred is their high energy wave that demanded negativity from me so resonated and tapped into my negativity that even though I was committed to being caring and loving and nurturing and supportive, I went into that mad banshee part of my mind and puked it out on them. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is because we need the feedback to tell us what we're doing to ourselves. And when person after person after person after person shows up, you know, you've probably heard one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time, sooner or later you got to start to recognize that you're involved. And what you want to do is uncover that part of your mind in your life. So perhaps making a shift in the way you perceive things as this principle or whoever it is attacking me, perhaps put into, so here's another person showing up in my life that's showing me the way I think and feel about myself from my early life. And I'm ready to own that and forgive it. That's where your worksheet is, to forgive that, to remove that. And when you literally remove that, you will literally resonate or set up different messages. And the people around you will respond differently because most people are simply responding unconsciously to what you're sending out. I mean, I'm talking about all of us now.
Yeah.
And if I keep getting the same message over and over and over again, that's when I need to start to conflict. How am I delivering that message that I keep getting this feedback, and am I willing to delve into? And usually it's a pretty painful part of the mind to delve into. And so it's going to involve me dropping into perhaps some of the deepest original pained experiences that I've had, allowing myself to come back into full recall with them, and starting to process through them. And processing in this work we define as the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes out.
So while you were talking...
Good breath. Go for it.
I was breathing and thinking about my dad and childhood, and one of the things with the interacting with people that's come up recently, well, not recently, but a couple of times throughout my life, which has been a recent trigger and not necessarily associated with this particular principle, but that I talk too much. And when I was breathing and thinking about my dad, I remembered not just my dad, but my mom, both of them used to talk for my brother because he was little and he didn't really, you know, he was two, almost 2 years younger than me. He didn't really talk. Because he was young, you know, he was two and I was four and I could talk. And how they would yell at me or snap at me when we would meet somebody new. And I'd say, oh, well, his name's Jerry, and he's, you know, this age or whatever. And it wasn't just when I was four. It was, you know, I don't know when I finally stopped talking for him. But I learned, I guess, the hard way, the apple times of being told, stop talking for your brother. Let your brother talk. Quit being so pushy. And they probably didn't say pushy when I was little, but.
That was
wow,
a baby message you got.
Never thought about that and why it makes me feel like such a bad person when I talk too much.
It brings up my thought disorders about what's wrong with me.
Right.
See, the beauty of understanding how language works with the mind, you know, when I say it makes me, you know, there's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that can come into conscious awareness out of those 10,000 units of electrical activity in the mind is 9 bits, just a little tiny fragment. and what controls the fragments I get to see of everything that's in there is my language. And so when I say to my mind, you know, it makes me really sad or whatever, I'm saying to my mind, I want you to develop and show me a picture world where I get to see how they're doing this to me. I will block all awareness of how I'm doing it to myself, and I will literally, my mind will generate a perceptual construct that shows me they're doing it to me. When I make just this little slight shift of language, here I am buying somebody putting me down again. What's the part of me that buys that? I just gave my mind permission to bring into that 9-bit awareness, this is how this happened. This is where, this is what's going on inside of me. And when I breathe into that and I bring love present, that stuff dissolves. In essence, that's forgiveness. So my language is key in instructing my mind how to structure the way I see the world. And then the goals that I hold take things to the next level and drive the mind or select which data my mind's going to use. So each time I'm in that state where I say, I feel put down, and I can own that I feel put down, then I can start to process the content of my mind where all those painful times where I experienced being put down, whether it was real or not, doesn't matter. I experienced it. All of that I can start to access and let loose of. And when I let loose of it, I stop sending out energetic messages that say, everybody has to come to me and put me down.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and you know, it doesn't matter which arena. If it's this principle operates in every arena. If it's a poverty issue, if I hold, no matter what happens, I always end up in poverty, then I'm always going to draw myself to circumstances that will complete the reason why I'm in poverty. If I'm in, you know, terrible relationships, I keep sending out that message. When I start shifting the messages, then people come that want to be in wonderful relationships. People come that want to support me and nurture me. People come that want to affirm who I am as a human being rather than what I bought from my power person who had a power person, and it's been going on in the family system for a long time.
Wow.
Breathing with you. And breathing is such a big key because it's the determiner of what moves in my mind. When there's something I don't want to look at, you know, I'm in the blame game. They put me down. Notice you hold your breath because in order to believe that, you have to hide the part of you that holds that self-put down. And holding the breath locks that down. When I breathe into it, it's not going to feel very good to go, here I am. I'm cooperating with this being put down. What do I believe? What did I buy into about myself? And it's time for me to, you know, process that one out and let it go.
Yeah.
So that sounded like some relief. What's happening for you?
It's a lot of relief.
Good.
It's
sweet.
Things that I've, that part about what am I buying into? What am I believing about what that person said? That what belief is inside me that's negative, that resonates with what somebody else is saying. And I mean, I've told students before, I am in the education system. I've told students before,
right.
You know, if somebody says your nose is big and stripy green and purple, you would be like, yeah, no, it's not, whatever. You know, you're weird. You're saying something ridiculous. I don't want to hear it.
Right.
But but they say, you know, oh, you're a skank, you're a floozy. And you believe it, and you get angry, and you start yelling at them. I said, you don't, it's not true. And you need to know it's not true. And then you can hear what that person says and be like, no, yeah, whatever, you're being ridiculous. But I didn't realize that it was when I was telling them that, you know, I was explaining, and they would cheer up and they would start to, you know, because they kind of understood. But what I didn't realize is that it was their own negative belief inside, that part of them was thinking that about themselves.
Right. There's a great line in a book by Richard Bach that says, we teach best that which we most need to learn.
Yeah.
So you've successfully opened that file in your mind on all those messages about yourself that aren't true. And that's an awesome place to be. Touching into some of the old unresolved emotional patterns with it isn't Dr. Feelgood, but if you consciously, purposely keep bringing love in, you consciously, purposely keep breathing, you'll just process through layer after layer after layer of that and be finished with it. So if you did a worksheet on this reviewer, probably the first goal, you know, that, you know, there are probably many worksheets that you could do on that reviewer. The first goal would probably be something like, well, what I want from them is for them to affirm me and approve of me. And if you go back, that's probably the perennial goal of your life. So now there's a whole row of dominoes to be cleaned up, and that will be canceling your need for this reviewer to affirm and approve of you, canceling the earlier one that you mentioned to approve, cancel your need for that second husband, that first husband, that mother, that father, and maybe even one or two where you do that same worksheet on the person that you look at when you look in the mirror.
Right. And, you know, there was the desire to help. When I was talking for my brother, it was just a desire to be helpful. It wasn't
out
that
of
I
goodness.
Wanted to
yeah.
be hurt. So I
yeah.
started, when I would get yelled at, then it was like, oh, well, you shouldn't help. You're being bad when you're trying to help. Or that
and
was
that
I'm
is
thinking
probably,
that's the message I took away.
Right. And that's probably one of the family messages. You know, that's part of the good old family feeling.
Yeah.
And so I'd support you being really clear. In fact, a good mind shifter here would be, are you familiar with the mind shifter tool that we use?
Yeah. What would be
okay,
a good
so you split the page. You write this on the left, and then everything comes up in response to it on the right. So the truth is that I, comma, Laura, have always been there in goodwill to help.
Yeah.
Good breath. That's the kind that heals. And it's time for me to let go of people's errant interpretation of my intentions. Yeah, good one.
Yeah.
And if you look back, you could very likely think of times when you listened to Dad or you listened to Mom tell their story about how they were misinterpreted and how, you know, the boss never understood them or Mom never understood Dad or Dad never understood me or my dad. Or, you know, you've probably heard the story 1,000 times because things like that tend to become a family system theme. Until somebody, in this case you, the early adopter, says, "I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to look this square in the eye. I'm going to stare it down. I'm going to open up the widest parts of my unconscious, and I'm going to let loose of this."
Yeah.
I would suggest with this deep an issue that you set aside a time when you've got at least 4 hours on your own. Your phone is off, the TV's off, the radio's off. Maybe there's some soft music playing in the background. And you just sit and write that mind shifter for 4 hours. Split the page in two, put that mind shifter on the left, and every thought that comes up, and let yourself get into breathing into deeper and deeper and deeper states. You may find yourself even going back and having genetic memory surface.
Yeah.
And then once you complete that process, then in a conscious, aware state, you go back to that, what you've written over that 4 hours, and you start looking at exactly where are the worksheets, what are the goals that I need to be canceling here. Now, I've got you. Do you get texts on this phone?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you two texts when we complete. One is going to be a presentation from Father's Day where we talk about the mindset that's required in order to have a sane mind, especially if you came out of a relationship with father that was degrading or abusive, father and mother actually both. So I'm going to send you that. And then I'm going to send you a link to a piece of work that was done. You know, we just completed a few weeks ago a codependence to interdependence communication practicum intensive online. And there was a woman who agreed or was working around some, actually she was going to the hospital because of some heart issues. And what we invited her to do in the intensive was to do some writing and asking ancestors about the condition of their hearts. And she actually did, you know, she shared that in the intensive, and then she called into a radio show. I'm going to send you a link to that section of the radio show. It's about a 25-minute piece that she does where she touched into her grandfather who, if I remember correctly, immigrated from Lithuania from deep, dire, horrific poverty, thinking that he was coming to a country with the streets paved of gold, and how they ended up literally digging a hole in the ground to live in. It's a cave. And the trauma of not having enough food and not knowing how to feed his family, and if, you know, the crops were going to fail, they'd starve, and his rage and his abuse toward his wife and his children as a result of that. And just opened a huge, I mean, she ended up in a dialogue with him, literal dialogue. It was so powerful for her to be able to get to look at what was going on with her heart physically. And I think those things will be able to assist you. And then, and then I would suggest that you consider going to the website, to whyagain.org. And if you look down the worksheet list, you'll see a link that says responsibility communication. And there's a letter there. There's actually a set of responsibility communication rules and a letter, actually a couple letters of people who've utilized the responsibility communication tool to open a space of healing. And I think that will take everything to the next level for you.
Okay.
So I'll send
you those
two links.
Thank you so much.
And, well, I am just delighted that you're ready to let lay this burden down. It sounds like it's been going on long enough. And time to move into a new phase of your life. That's awesome.
Well, and I actually get to go to a different school with a different evaluator, and I most desperately don't want to create that same situation again. And the new evaluator is a very kind, loving woman.
So you're hoping to get to recreate that situation then?
I want to create a positive situation. I'd hope not to recreate the negative that I've been coming
from. Oh, I thought
I
heard you say you wanted to recreate that same situation again with this new evaluator.
No. No, I want to create a positive, interactive, collaborative.
There you go. So notice you've gotten clear on where you want to go, but when you were clear on where you didn't want to go, guess where you end up? Where you don't want to go.
Okay.
You know, listen to yesterday. He says, the power of life and death is in my words. And when we go into resistance to something in our minds and language how we don't want it, you know, he says it this way. Here's how Yeshua describes how we create. He says, let thine eye be single, and eye means perception, and thy body will be filled with light. And if you talk to a modern-day physiologist, they'll tell you, or physicist, they'll tell you that matter is light energy solidified. Let thine eye be single. Be totally focused on one frequency to the exclusion of all others, and it will literally show up in the world of form. And it doesn't matter whether you're focusing on it because you want it or you don't, because you hate it or you love it. All you have to do is say it, and you got it.
Oh.
So to begin to really observe your language, watch where your language is going. You know, Shakespeare said, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below. In essence, what he's telling us is, this is how we create unconsciously. My words fly up, but I don't look at the mind energy behind it. And if I never look at and clean up the mind energy behind my words, that's what I'm creating my life out of. You know, if you go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told by the Greeks, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. It doesn't say that at all. What it says in Aramaic is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Literally. That mind energy we hold as creators, and probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages, and that we have cooperated with, is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And the way we create is with the mind energy that we hold. And if we watch our language will tell us where our creation is going. And everything that I say I don't want and not about is exactly where I'm heading with my creative process until I catch myself and go, oh, okay. So now there's a part of me about, man, I never want to go there again. And that energy needs to be breathed through, brought to the surface and forgiven, and then replaced with, oh, and here's where I want to go. And your language was awesome on where you're clear you want to go once you become aware of it. But in each and every case, you've got to become consciously aware of it, because if we just let the unconscious take over, we'll slide right back into the old pattern. It'll just keep happening.
Right. You know, and I have heard Dr. Tim say this before, and I've heard it in the archive messages also, and I'm acting like it's the first time I heard it, but yeah.
Okay. So is there a thought disorder that goes along with that you're on the verge of?
Oh.
Like, why don't I ever get it? Kind of thought?
Well.
So notice that's another power person message. And you can let go of it and be gentle with yourself and recognize that. You know, we have to build the brain cells. Here's my offering. In watching people over the last 50 years of developing this work, my take is that it takes, with people who have dedication and actually work the tools, it takes 5 to 10 years to really comprehend what we're talking about and where we're going with this. to make such a shift in mind. You know, when you think of how massive the multi-generational database is that's in our mind from the generations, I mean, it's beyond fathomable. You know, when you start realizing that in your bloodline and mine, in just 30 generations of people, of ancestors, there are 1.6 billion people. And we have stored in our genes the patterns of every one of those lives. And those patterns tend to run us. And the process of getting conscious and undoing those patterns takes time. You don't just hear something once and go, oh, yeah, well, I'll just throw out all that 1.6 billion lives, memories of those lives, and I'll just do this. You can't do it. It can't be done. Now, of course, when we realize it's possible, everybody wants to do it yesterday. You know, Yeshua said, you can't storm the gates of the kingdom. You can't just say, oh, okay, I got it. I'm done. It's a process. There's work to be done. You need to go in and undo those old patterns. You know, there was a great psychologist that wrote a poem about this that's so profound and so right on target. He said, as you travel through life, no matter what your goal, keep your eye upon the donut and not upon the hole. And the mind is going to tend, the multi-generational database mind is going to tend to keep bringing us back to the old pattern. And when I keep my eye on the goal, you know, where I really want to go on the donut, then I keep upgrading my carbon-based memories mind. And I get to the point where I've so restructured it that it supports me in truth and where I really want to live. And that's the whole objective of this work. And it's not an overnight process.
Yeah.
So be gentle with yourself on the way there. Keep engaged and just keep moving the layers. And it comes in layers. And some of the layers aren't very nice when they come up. But it's necessary to do it. You know, when they asked Yeshua, you know, in essence, the question in this particular passage was, how do we keep God happy? How do we please God? And Yeshua tells him, he gives him an Aramaic idiom. And the idiom basically says, you're going to have to incorporate, understand, and live everything that I'm teaching you. Half of his audience, as a result of that question and that answer, said, too hard a saying. And they turned and they left, and they never came back. And the average person says, too hard a saying. I don't want to do that much work. It's like, but when you realize that's where your whole life comes from, what else is there to do? And, you know, however long it takes, doesn't matter. There's work to be done. And know that there's support here to support you doing it.
Yes, and thank you so much for having the materials available and free on whyagain.org and doing the radio blog or radio show for so often and so many years that you have done it, and keeping the archives so nicely organized also. And thank you, Jeannie, for helping
Jeannie.
With everything.
That's Jeannie you got to thank for that one. I wouldn't have a clue how to touch any of that. She's the genius behind that whole thing and the website and the app. Have you got the Forgiveness app on your phone?
Yes, I do. And well, I did. But I got a new phone. I got one of these iPhone things. So.
Okay, well, there's actually a new version of it that she just completed about 2 weeks ago. Put in, I don't even know how many hundreds of hours to redo it. So if you just go to your app store and type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, the newest version is there, and put it to work.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and I'll open the space for anyone else that needs to talk or wants to comment.
Well, thank you for your willingness, your openness. I suspect that you've probably hit a home run for virtually everybody that will ever listen to this particular show and those that are on it now. So much appreciation.
Thank you.
All right, Laura, take care. Blessings. Holding your space. All right. Powerful, powerful process. Thank you, thank you. So, Miss Jeannie, everything's quiet, so let's go to the book. We're going into a new chapter in Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And it's chapter 15 on transitions. For those who are not aware of it, we are reading from the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Usually, unless there's a hand up at the beginning of the show, at the beginning of each show, and through the period of the year, we're going to cover the whole book. And we're just about on track with reading a couple of paragraphs a day. We're about halfway through the year, and we're halfway through the book. So we're on page, if you're following along with us, page 89, chapter 15. If you don't have a copy of the book, it is not available for sale at this point. It's out of print. However, you can go to eBay or Amazon, and there are usually dozens of copies on each site that you can purchase fairly inexpensively, so you can follow along with us. And or you can download the book free from our website, whyagain.org. So transitions is the title of this new chapter, and Richard starts out saying, I'm not sure what you mean when you say letting go of the parts of us that need to heal. It sounds like I might lose something in the process, Richard confided. It is frightening to most people. For some, at first, it appears to be the downside of doing this work. As you engage in this type of thinking and heal, you will lose a very dear friend, I offer to Richard. Well, how so? He looked kind of puzzled. When you engage in true forgiveness, fear, manipulation, blame, and guilt are going to evaporate from your life. You'll no longer be able to play the role of victim, which has been a part of your life for so long. That friend has got to go. Richard says, that's true, he admitted. I'm just now realizing how much of my life and identity have been tied up in guilt and fear. It does feel like a big part of me is going to disappear, he lamented. I won't know how to act anymore. Who will I be? So that's a pretty typical response to, you know, I have this self that I think is who I am. And the truth is, it's not the self at all. I remember a friend of mine who was a medical doctor in Fort Lauderdale, and he had a client that had cancer. This goes back 30 years ago. And he called me into his office and asked if I'd work with this guy because he suspected that it was self-induced. He was doing it to himself. So we did a fair bit of work, and this fellow had been a businessman, pretty tough guy, and had lived his life with a lot of rage. And we got down to the point where he could see energetically. He started to understand that his body was not a body, but was an energy system, and that diseases were a result of holding on to energies that really didn't belong in the system, dis-ease. And he got to the point where he could see how, at least for himself, this was his feedback to me, he had created his own cancer. And then he said, but, you know, that's who I am. And if I let go of that, I won't be me anymore. And he would not do the work. He just wouldn't do it. And about 6 months later, he was dead. He came like face to face with knowing he was doing this to himself. But he was so hooked into, but that's who I am. And the reason I bring that up is because when you realize, if you've got that identity, and that's an identity that's really, you know, gotten you somewhere in your life or gotten you attention or whatever it is you've used it for, there's such a deeply powerful, sweet awesome replacement for that self, that one's worth giving up in a heartbeat. That hostility and fear-based self, the identity of being victim, to really, you know, if it's gotten you brownie points, if it's gotten you attention, you know, that's nice. It's kind of like, you know, there's in psychology, they talk about the soggy cereal principle. And that is that the child, the average adult, if you give them a bowl of soggy cereal, they're not going to touch it. It's like, ew. But the child's hungry, they're going to eat the soggy cereal. And people who don't know any better than to identify with that false fear and hostility-based self will chew on that and chew on that and chew on that like it's their very lifeblood. When waiting in the wings for every person, and I'm talking about every one of us, and I don't care who we refer to. I don't care if you're talking about Mussolini or Hitler or any of them. Every one of us started out with one simple truth. We are made of the energy called love. That's just the way it is. And when we open the space to let that come in, it will flush out the hostility and fear-based self that really, truly doesn't even exist except as a false image in the mind. It's all false. That whole hostility and fear-based game is it seems so powerfully present in people's lives and so persistent and so there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, that, well, how could that be false? If you're holding on to mind energy that's based in something other than love, then you get to make up a whole false world of rage and guilt and grief and blame and trauma and drama and fight and struggle, or you can give it up. Now, at first, it's going to seem like, well, but this old friend is gone. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of friends you don't need. And as you allow the truth about yourself to come literally to enter into your physiology. Just last week, we were doing a Stillpoint breathing session with Jeannie. And there was a particular piece of music that we'd been listening to that really aroused some sadness in it for her. Jeannie, would you like to share a little bit about what happened when that opened up for you?
Okay. Yeah, it was a song called Carry Me, and it starts out and talks about a tear that drops into the ocean, and, you know, it can't swim in these waters, please carry me. And it was just this real heavy sadness every time I heard it, and I couldn't pinpoint what it was about or anything. And then we did a breath session, and the whole time I was doing the breath session, then we were playing that song. We had it on repeat, so it would just keep playing over and over and over. And what I got, a couple of things. First thing that came up was a sadness about my son and what if I lost him. And so that was just, I guess, an underlying deep thought, and that I wouldn't be able to survive. And then I got it that I that said again.
And lost his twin.
Oh yeah, and I had lost his twin. I was pregnant with twins, and at the fourth month, I lost the little girl, and then so Ryan is my survivor, and he's my only birth child, and so it was just this horrible feeling of losing him, and then the thinking of the words of the song that I was the teardrop and that I was dropped into this ocean of this world and a separation from God. There's another part of the song where it says, you know, lead me through this turmoil with your mercy and take me back home. And so it's like, you know, wanting to be reconnected to God again, reconnected to love. And then it said, and give me peace. And so it was just, I went through all of that. It was just, and then I got to the end of it and felt just peaceful. And so now I can listen to the song. Say what?
hear this tail point you had.
Oh, and so now I can listen to the song, and it's a beautiful song, and just be with it, and that I don't get that sadness. It's such a shift. But another thing, towards the end of the breath session, it was like I was looking from outside myself into myself, and it was like empty. And then I came out of the still point, it felt like a body slam, like somebody had just slammed into me and my whole body, and it just took me, brought me back out of it with a gasp. And then the last few minutes of the still point, I was kind of half in, half out, and just feeling my body physically, like feeling my face and my arms and my hands. And I said, I think that it was the first time I'd really felt my body. And so I think that what I did was I finally emptied that fear and then actually incarnated back into this physiology. So it was very powerful. And I said, you know, back several months ago, you know, I was given the message that I would awaken in five measures. And I had already gone through the five, and the fifth one was about incarnating back into your physiology. And I said, you know, apparently I didn't fully do it that time. And so this was like the completion of it. So it's pretty powerful.
And the energy was just awesomely sweet. That energy, which is at the root of the truth of every one of us. That's what we're heading for. So thank you for sharing that, sweetie. That was so profound to just observe. Actually, it was so powerful that I actually turned the video on my camera and videoed the last 15 minutes of her. So she's literally physically touching her face and her arms and her shoulders. At one point, she kind of pulled her shoulders and it's like, I feel so small. It was like she was entering her body for the first time. It's pretty powerful. Any other thoughts, sweetie? Okay. Well, then we've still got about 7 minutes left. If you're out there in listener land, we would love to hear your voice. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Is all of this making sense? If there's any part of it that isn't making sense or any part that needs to be, you know, filled in, expanded on, that's exactly what we're here for. So if you have a question for us or something going on that we can support you with, Laura, I really appreciate you opening that whole issue. I think that's going to be a gift for everyone to really tap into, especially as you pay attention to the energetic dynamics of, you know, as people listen, and you can hear at the point at which that breath happens, it just lets go of a whole load of that, and that's the power of the breath in the process. So, okay, let's talk to our caller.
Yeah, hi, Cecilia.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
Oh, my God, so much self-hate came up after listening to me on there yesterday. On the show.
Good. So you're in process?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
I just want to say,
do me an honor, right?
What?
I say dubious.
Oh, so I'm honored. Yes, thanks. Thanks for the pain.
Yeah.
And
thanks for the pain.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm saying it to me, too, because I willingly... That's the part that about the process of this work is that I don't know if I'm supposed to feel that much pain or if I'm just stuck in it, but I'm doing the worksheets and all that, and the tears and the mucus that's coming out of me is just pouring out of me, and I kind of still processing it today. I know it's not a one-time deal. Somehow I understand that. But I guess my question is that kind of supposed to come up, all that the tears? Because I'm not sure obviously I'm breathing when I'm crying. I can't not breathe when I cry. Sometimes I wonder, though, if I'm blocking it, so there I'm going to leave it at that.
Well, oftentimes people use crying, and, you know, if you think about the little kid crying, what do they look like? And they're using it to shut their breath down. If you can breathe and cry at the same time, great. But if it's a choice of one or the other, breathe. There's a powerful, another powerful piece of music out there that you might want to check in with. And obviously somebody has done a significant amount of work to be able to sing this song. And it's Carly Simon, and she sings about, I haven't got time for the pain. And one of the lines in that song says, and it's speaking to Rooka basically as I hear it, it says, you showed me how to fill my heart with love, how to bring in all that white light coming down from the heavens. That's always there for all of us, but not if we're stuck looking down into the carbon-based memory in the past. You know, in the Aramaic language, the word repent isn't some kind of put down, repent, you sinner. The word actually means to turn another way. You put it together with the way she languages in that song. And most of us are locked into looking at the perceptual constructs from the past and carbon-based memory, the generational pain. But then when we repent, when we literally, it's like, you know, make a 180-degree shift and turn our attention another way and open the space for that white light to come down from the heavens. It just floods and flushes and cleans everything out. And, you know, you can't be rid of it if you're not willing to clean it out. You know, Jeannie uses the example oftentimes of, you know, we have this garbage can and I really don't want to deal with what's in it. I don't want to smell it. I don't want to. So I have this air freshener. I go by two or three times a day and I spray air freshener on it. So everything seems to be fine. But sooner or later, you got to empty the garbage can.
Well, and when I emptied it, it smelled so bad I cried.
I got it. And the mucus, you know, mucus has two purposes in the body. One is it's a thin, watery lubricant. But where there's toxicity, mucus thickens to trap the toxicity and keep it out of the cell. If we've gone through year after year, decade after decade of trauma and toxicity, then there are thin layers. And when mucus dries out, you know, you blow your nose in a Kleenex and you got a full Kleenex. And if you come back the next day, it's shrunk down to almost nothing. It's dehydrated. Mm-hmm. Well, that happens inside the body. And as it dehydrates, as that mucus thickens and dehydrates, it creates layer upon layer upon layer, especially in the colon. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had people where they've measured a colon 11 inches in diameter, weighing 65 pounds. And that's basically hardened mucus. When you open the space and you bring in the vitality to start to process that, it reliquifies. It's really important to drink, to keep hydrated, so that that mucus that's rehydrating, and depending where it is in the body, those parts of the body can literally physically look like they're blowing up, like what happened here, as the mucus reliquifies and the body, if the lymphatic system, if the microcirculation is working properly, then the lymphatic system takes that waste out of the structure and through the eliminative channel. So, you know, it's all part of the process, and stay in willingness and go for it. It's right on track.
Okay. I'll do that. And that song I listened to over and over again, and I cried a million tears when I was 13, 14, and 15.
Well, it might help to open, you know, the next time you're ready to breathe, it might help to listen to it and let it open the next layer.
Okay.
Sweet. All right,
thank
well,
you.
We're down to the last minute, so I'm going to say thank you and honoring the work you do and holding the space for you, young lady. Be blessed.
Same to you. Bye.
All right, everybody. Have the best year yet of your eternal lives. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.